Our God is with you.
And also with you.
This is a story that's taken from the Gospel of John. And so Pilate said to Jesus, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own, or have others told you about me?" And Pilate answered, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and chief priests handed you over to me. What have you done?" And Jesus answered, "My kingdom does not belong to this world. If my kingdom did belong to this world, my attendants would be fighting to keep me from being handed over. But as it is, my kingdom is not of here." And so Pilate said to him, "So, you are a king?" Jesus said, "You say that I'm a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." People of God, hear what the Spirit is saying.
Thanks be to the Lord.
Today is a feast of Christ the King. This feast day is celebrated about Jesus, who sits at the right hand of God and reigns as Lord of heaven and earth. It anticipates the final judgment of God when Christ will come again to rule in peace and justice. That's a quote. I have to admit, this feast has confused me many times. Because of the overt patriarchy and hierarchy that's inherent in this. It didn't seem to be the Jesus that I knew and what I was about. That's why the second reading that we chose from Sister Mary Lucy and what she was reflecting on, that there's not many old Saint Nicks around in that king that helped out with the poor in that. They don't all have that good of a reputation. And to put Jesus in that block seems a bit strange. Other than, it may be something different. I mean, images of crowns and thrones and scepters and are prominent on this feast. And that's not the Jesus who I know. These symbols are in stark contrast to other ones, more humble images. Jesus' crown of thorns. It's interesting. There's just a reversal of two letters, thorns and thrones, and how they get flipped. Or think about Jesus washing the feet of his disciples. Think about Jesus riding in on a donkey. That had nothing to do with the kingship that this level, or the level that Pilate was talking about and looking at. And so I began to do a little bit of study of the history. And for people who I've already mentioned this to, don't raise your hand. But do you know when the Feast of Christ the King came about? Don't go cheating, Richard. 1925. It came about in 1925. And that's when Pope Pius wrote an encyclical called In the First. He created this challenging the so-called leadership of that day, that misguided leadership. You know what else happened in 1925? In that same year, Hitler published Mein Kampf. Mussolini assumed dictatorial power in Italy. It was also the year that Stalin took over as successor of Lenin in Russia. That's where this feast was brought by why Pius put it there, to say, no, that's not what this thing's about. It's about a servant leader. So this whole thing stands in such incredible contrast. Christ the King was created to remind us that unlike tyrants, Jesus was just and faithful, one who brings peace to the world. When we follow the commands of love one another, you know, kind of as the first Christians did for 300 years, They followed what they called the way. And when they talk about Jesus being the way, they're talking about not him. It's talking about how do we live like Jesus. That's the way we need to live. That's the way we need to be about. That means we need to love our enemies. Think about that today. That's no easy thing. It's really difficult. He talks about us being nonviolent. Jesus said, put away the sword. If you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. He was nonviolent, and that's the way he's talking to us to do. Unfortunately, Constantine seduced early Christianity in the year 300 into a whole different vision of what that was. I come to see that perhaps, as Pope Pius did, is that this feast is a time for us to set the record straight. This is a different king, not one of the world. This is not a king who seeks dominance over others. It's not something that we need to see dominance over. It's not about me being first, because the first are going to be last. It's a different way of seeing that. It's to raise awareness, I believe, of the fallacy of Christian nationalism. To firmly proclaim that we need to take that word Christian back from the Christian nationalist. Because that's not the way Jesus lived. So what is Christian nationalism? According to Andrew Whitehead and Samuel Perry, Christian nationalism is a cultural framework, a collection of myths and traditions and symbols and narratives and value systems. It idealizes and advocates for the fusion, the joining of Christianity with American life, civic life. Joining Christianity and country. Researchers and public say that, get this, sir, that this is done by the researchers of the Public Religion Research Institute and by the Brookings. They estimate that one-third of the people in the United States follow this whole thing of Christian nationalism. That's a problem. That's something we need to take a look at. Carter Haywood uses the phrase to call it Christofascism. She explains that it's a seductive form of authoritarianism that's taking shape in the guise of Christian faith in America, especially when it comes to liberty and freedom, even at the expense of the common good. So, what do we need to focus on today? Christ the King Sunday provides us with that opportunity in liturgy to speak out against Christian nationalism. These ideologies of tyrants in the 20th century who prompted the feast insisted that the individual exists to serve the state. The Pope, in that day, back in 1925, responded that that's not true. The fact is, we're here to serve God and our neighbor, no matter who that neighbor is, whether we agree with them or not. It's supposed to be a reign of mercy that we owe our faithfuls, not judgment and division. It's Christ's command to love one another that we're called to obey. So when certain leaders insist that the United States was intended to be a Christian nation, that's just flat out wrong. History tells us that our country protects the rights of all religious expressions, only one of which is Christianity. We need to be able to say that to others. Christians were to have the freedom to practice their religion, but not they have the right to tell others what their religious beliefs need to be. This means that policies of discrimination against LGBTQA people, about sanctioning public prayer in our public schools, saying in the law that the Bible needs to be taught in our public schools, eliminating women's rights, all those are not justified by the definition of Christian faith and the founding of our country. They're unconstitutional. And they're against our faith. You see, Christianity was a movement that did not find its dictates from religious leaders in the beginning. It rose out of every common day people, you and me. That's why it's important for us to hear it. Jesus sought to change the hearts and minds of people who live in accordance with God's justice and righteousness, not to impose a singular belief system from on high. First of all, Jesus did not start a religion. He did not intend the Christian faith to be a religion. He was calling people to a way of living. He was a Jew. He followed Judaism his whole life. He died a Jew. He was a Jew who welcomed the stranger, who welcomed the outcast. Jesus promoted a way of life that challenged us to love God with our whole heart, our whole mind, and our whole self, and to love our neighbor as ourself. And who was that neighbor? Oh my God, it was a Samaritan who they disagreed with and they hated. That means we are to love everybody. So in other words, Christianity is not and never was meant to be a theocracy. And the definition of a theocracy is it's a form of government where a deity, a god, is recognized as the supreme ruler. That means that the state's legal system is based on religious law. That's not what our country was founded on. That's not what Jesus called us in faith to be. Jesus was trying to reform the existing religious structures of his day to be aligned more with the call of the prophets. Now, I've got a challenge here for you. How many prophets were part of the structure of the political field in the days of the prophets in the Old Testament? None. Zero. So, it's consistent with faith history that not be part of what government be. We have to understand when we speak of Christ the King, we're talking about something totally different in the world that the world understands about power, leadership, authority, and strength. It's too easy and too often for people to take the kingship of Jesus and put it into world's ideas. Listen to that scripture of today. It was profoundly picked to speak of that. Pilate said to Jesus, "Are you King of the Jews?" Jesus said, "Do you ask me that? Or someone else tell you that?" He said, "I'm not a Jew." And Jesus said, "My kingdom does not belong to this world. My attendants would be fighting for me if I'd been handed over and wouldn't let me." And Jesus says, "Then you are a king." He says, "No, you say that I'm a king." Think of that. Jesus never accepted that. So, what do we need to and how do we need to respond to Christian nationalism? I believe it takes one person at a time. The first person I need to check is Tom. First person you need to check is you. How do you understand power? How do I understand power? Is it the love of power in my life? Or do I work for the power of love in my life? I mean that I first need to love myself as a child of God. And if I'm a child of God, so are all you. And so are the people who disagree with me. And so are the Christian nationalists. They're children of God too. How do we come together in understanding it? If I don't live that power of love, how can I ever call them to live it? When I call them out in name and call them ugly things. My judging others and calling them names accomplished nothing. Showing love by my actions will accomplish. Did you ever hear what Gandhi said about Christianity? "I love your Christ. I don't like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ." Whew, what an indictment. You see, we have an opportunity to live that differently and to proudly say, I'm a Christian and you'll know me by my love. You'll know me by my love. That's how they knew Jesus. That's how the first was. Gandhi also said, it is a first-class human tragedy that people on earth who claim to believe in the message of Jesus, who they describe is the Prince of Peace, shows little belief in actual practice. God, that hurts me. So I have to check myself. Do I live that? Do we live that? That's the way I believe that we're going to challenge society in our present world, in the darkness we see, to bring light to it. I must say that many people do follow Jesus as it taught, and many of us here do, and sometimes we fail. We have to understand that we are imperfect. Sometimes we don't. But that's where we need reconciliation. That's where we need to care for each other in that reconciliation. And I believe that's same true about those who we disagree with. We are people who are both in need of reconciliation to bring us all together. And that starts with us reaching out in reconciliation. Is that going to be hard to accomplish? You bet. Jesus had a hard time with it. Even after he died, his disciples ran away from him. So, I know that I don't know the whole truth about anything. I need to be open and open my life to see and listen to others. And perhaps even listen to my adversaries, because they got a piece of the truth too. Today, what we're talking about is a servant king who turned away from all the trappings of temporal and moral power. You know, in the scriptures it talked about when Jesus was out in the desert, those three temptations that he had when he was out in the desert was a statement of what his kingdom was about. Think about that. Jesus in Matthew goes and talks about about those who are forsaken. And Jesus said, and the people said, when did we not give you food? When did we not thirst? Is when you didn't do it for the least of them, you didn't do it for me. Whew. Just this past week, I heard a man who was saying, oh, I wish I could get into the prison and teach and help reach prison because the gospel says I need to visit the people in prison. My response to him was, you know, you don't have to go to a prison to do that. There's all kinds of people who live in the prison of their mind. How do we visit them? How do we bring them freedom? How do I get my own prison taken care of? I need to start with me. So, does this all seem overwhelming? Yeah. But know the power of your actions. I mean, I have a choice every moment in everything I do. What I do is either going to make the world better, or it's going to make the world not so much better. Do I love God and my neighbor in this difficult season? That's not easy, and it is challenging. Do I need to be respectful and curious about others? When you notice that someone may have a different opinion, maybe we need, instead of condemning, ask them, why do you have that belief? What brings you to that peace? Keep in mind that we're all created in God's image, and we need to be open to changing our minds about some things. When we grow to be a people who listens to one another, you know, Stephen Covey says seven habits of highly effective people. He said one of the things is seek first to understand, and then be understood. Perhaps what we need to do is first understand what it is that brings people to see where they are. Be diligent about reading Scripture. Grow in grace and knowledge. In your prayers, listen to Christ first. And only then open your heart and your mind. You know, we need to speak out as best we can. We do need to set the record straight. This country was not based on a Christian foundation. It was based on an openness to all people. Did we live it all the time? Nope. We stole land from the Native Americans. We did the same thing with slavery. You can't call that Christian. But we need to call it out that that was not the ideal of what our first people did. So this is what it means when we talk about Christ the King, when we sing about the cosmic Christ. We need to be radiant in darkness, a light to the darkness. We need to be vulnerable, and that's hard. We need to understand that suffering may be part of this, but understand that we will be resurrected too. A friend of mine, he was working for places that shut down, and he was out of a job. And he put his application into several places, and he got rejected by them pretty soundly. And he came and he said, "What am I going to do?" He says, "I got a house payment to make." And I said, "What do you tell your clients?" And he said, "Well, I tell them there's always something good going to come out of it." I said, "Well, you're not going to see anything good come out unless you start looking for something good coming out of it." And I think that's true about what we're doing today. Guess what happened to him? He got a job that he was going to get more pay than he had before, and better health insurance. And he came to me and he got real emotional. He says, "God was with me during all that darkness, but I didn't see it. And now I know He was there." I think that's true about us today. You are a child of God. And playing small does not serve the world. So Christians, we need to be a model of servant leadership, just as Jesus did. We need to understand that all humanity and all creation really rest on some things that we do as individuals, and that has power. Because the cosmic Christ, the risen servant King, the one we follow, He is the way. And in doing that, we can renew the face of the earth. My brother and sister, I ask for your comments.